Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired, and I'm joined remotely by my co-host, Wired senior editor, Michael Calori. Hey, Mike.
Hello. Hi.
I don't know about you, but I'm really missing the studio.
Yeah. Especially the lighting.
Well, the lighting was probably not its best feature, but, you know, the whole equipment thing and sitting in a room talking to people in real life. I miss that.
Breathing the same air.
We're also joined remotely this week by Wired senior writer Lily Hay Newman. Hey, Lily.
Hey, sorry I'm not breathing the same air as you guys.
We regret that as well. Lily is coming to us from New York City, where she is, I think, hanging out in some sort of closet right now, it appears, for best sound. Is that correct?
Don't blow my cover, Lauren.
You would not be the first podcaster to be hanging out in a very small enclosed space surrounded by clothing and carpeting. But we really appreciate you coming on the show this week. Today, we are talking about voting. In case you haven't heard, there's a big election coming up in America. Later in the show, we're going to talk about why it's 2020 and apps and online voting systems still aren't really a thing here in the US. But first, we're going to talk about voting by mail, because that's the most critical thing to address this year. Due to the pandemic, a lot of people are likely going to avoid going to polling places in person. That means that votes cast by mail-in ballots are expected to be higher than ever. And that has led to an intensely political back and forth about election security, the role of the Postal Service, and public safety. So, Lily, you wrote a guide to voting by mail for Wired.com. Should we actually be concerned about voter fraud via mail-in ballots?
I think the rumors of vote by mail's insecurity have been greatly overstated. There are some things to worry about. As with any system, there's no perfect security. You know, there's always considerations and extra steps you want to take and extra vigilance, all that stuff. But vote by mail is very secure from everything we know, from all the studies that have been done. Rates of voter fraud are extremely, extremely, extremely low. And I think relevant to the recent discourse, something that's really important is that when there is a very highly publicized example of mail fraud in vote by mail schemes, the reason it's so significant and noteworthy is because it's rare and because, crucially, it was discovered. So, you know, though you don't know what you don't know, What we do know is that when there are examples of vote-by-mail fraud that get too big or are, you know, too significant, they get caught, and then we hear about them, and then they get used as examples of mail fraud. So I just think it's important to understand that cycle that plays out, that it's actually a good thing when we find out about these examples and when they're stopped. It doesn't mean that the system is totally insecure and needs to be thrown out or something.
Lily, how do you explain the political frenzy around mail-in voting when, in fact, in the past, there's been evidence showing that mail-in voting doesn't really benefit one party over another?
Yeah, all I can really say is that it seems to be fully led by President Donald Trump. You know, I normally would not want to sort of point fingers or assign blame, but I just don't think that's a partisan statement. I think he is the person bringing this stuff up and making these accusations, and the President of the United States is obviously incredibly influential and has a huge platform. So, but I honestly don't really hear it coming from anywhere else. You know, I hear it coming from President Trump, and then his allies will sometimes repeat some of the things he's said. But yeah, that's the only explanation. I don't know. I'm curious. Have you guys heard anything else? Because I am not hearing it from election officials, not hearing it from secretaries of state or other, you know, top election officials, not hearing it from researchers.
Yeah, I haven't been hearing anything either. And the curious part about it is that when politicians do talk about mail-in voting being somehow insecure or somehow there's, you know, the chance that your vote is going to be compromised, the thing that's missing a lot of the time, almost all the time, is exactly how that's done. So I'm really curious if you've seen any of these scams, how they're perpetrated, like what happens? How does a vote that's mailed become lost or miscounted?
I think some of the examples, such as, you know, there was an incident in Paterson, New Jersey, that President Trump for a while was a fan of bringing up. A lot of the examples, there really aren't like fraudulent ballots necessarily, or, you know, voting for someone else even, or, you know, impersonation, which is sort of the big concern. A lot of the incidents that come up are like breaking the rules about how you collect the ballots. So in that situation in Paterson, what was suspicious was that there were hundreds of ballots all stuffed into the same post box, you know, same day, things like that. And so the accusation there isn't even that the ballots aren't legitimate. It's that they were collected like illegally by a third party. You know, we're not really supposed to go around and like solicit each other's ballots or, you know, sort of take it upon ourselves to collect each other's ballots. The idea is everybody's supposed to submit their own. So people should not, you know, break the law and improperly collect ballots. But it's like, in terms of the actual impersonation, if you were trying to commit mail fraud, you'd really have to go box to box, like mailbox to mailbox, pull out everyone's absentee ballot on the day that it arrives, know what their signature looks like, know what their social security number looks like. And, you know, some of that information is available online. Like, for example, stolen social security numbers are available in criminal forums, things like that. But how are you going to predict whose ballot you're going to be able to steal? You know, it's just when you actually start thinking about the logistics of carrying out such a scam, it's pretty tough. The best idea I can think of is compromising the ballots at the source, like where they're printed or, you know, when they're still in the hands of election officials. But the challenge with that, the reason that's not just a shoo-in either, is that election officials are professionals who are specifically trained in physical security, in addition to, you know, digital security and tabulation and all the other components of their job. Physical security and ballot security are core to their profession. So this isn't just like, you know, Lily got assigned to take care of the ballots when they come from the printer or something. This is like professional people who have a plan for how to keep that those, you know, stacks of ballots secure until they get stuffed into envelopes and mailed out. So, you know, there's no point in the chain where it would be obvious or really simple to just make this happen in the way that the president has alleged.
And we all know, Lily, that you're super sketchy. You should not be given control of the ballots. I mean, you not only cover hackers, but you are a secret hacker yourself.
Right. I mean, so I've got all the ballots in the closet with me right now.
So it seems as though we're saying that you should feel pretty secure about voting via mail-in ballot. So, Lily, if someone wants to request a mail-in ballot, where do they go and what do they do?
I think the crucial thing is just understanding that your vote will be counted. It will move through the mail and, you know, be secure. And if something were to happen, it would be discovered. That's the crucial thing. It's like, yes, it's not impossible that bad things could happen, but there are checks in place and it will be rectified. So I think those, both sides of that, like you're saying. To vote by mail, to find out how to do it in your state, highly recommend the Wired.com guide that breaks it down state by state. I spent many hours. It was not an army of interns. It was just me collating all the information for all the different states. And basically, there's two crucial parts. You need to be registered to vote. There are some states that allow you to register on election day, same day that you're going to vote, which is great for states that offer it, but it's a minority of states, so I definitely would not rely on that. Highly, highly suggest right now, pause the podcast where you are and go register to vote. And then the second step is in states that aren't going to send you an absentee ballot automatically, or, you know, send you a vote by mail ballot if you're in a state that's all vote by mail anyway. If you're not going to get that, you need to request a ballot. And again, you know, you can use our breakdown or, you know, just Google to find your state's process for requesting your ballot. And then, right, as soon as you get it, mail it back in right away, immediately. Pause whatever podcast you're listening to when you get it. Hope it's the Gadget Lab podcast, and mail it back in. And also, if you voted in previous elections, you're probably already registered. So actually, it's not even as many steps as it sounds.
One more quick question before we go to a break. Lots of people are moving around right now, despite the fact that we're living through a pandemic. According to a new report from the Pew Research Center, 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. say that they've changed residence or know someone who did during this time. And so I'm wondering what voting means for people who are moving around. Like, is there a difference between requesting an absentee ballot if you want to make sure that you're able to vote for your previous state if you move states? Should you move and re-register quickly? How does that actually work?
Right. That's a great question. And I think, important to start thinking now for your own case, because there are a few factors that would determine how you deal with that. And especially because of state by state laws, I can't give one blanket answer. But one thing I would sort of think about is there are states that vote by mail in every election, but all the other states that are doing vote by mail are doing expanded absentee by mail for the purpose of this election. Most of those states are saying you don't need an excuse because your excuse is the pandemic, you know, and that's just kind of universal. My best piece of advice would be to maybe if you're in that situation, take the pandemic out of it for a second and just think about what's actually happening. Am I going to be quote unquote traveling during the election? Is that my issue? Or did I move? Is that my issue? You know, and then sort of figure it out from there. If you moved, you know, hopefully there's time to register in your new state. If you're sort of only temporarily moved and it's more like we could call it traveling, you know, I would vote absentee in the way that your state allows.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more about voting in the digital age.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Want a new podcast to look forward to each week? One that's entertaining, informative, and packed with actionable content? Come on, of course you do. Introducing The Jordan Harbinger Show. The Jordan Harbinger Show, which Apple named one of its best of 2018, is aimed at making you a better informed, more critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening, even inside your own brain. Jordan dives into the minds of fascinating people, from athletes, authors, and scientists, to mobsters, spies, and hostage negotiators. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, B as in boy, I, N as in Nancy, G-E-R, in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now.
Welcome back. So the voting we've been talking about is fairly old school, right? We're talking about mail-in ballots and relying on paper, actual paper, in 2020. So there have been a few attempts at modernizing the voting process in the U.S., but they largely haven't caught on. There tends to be this differing of opinions between technologists who want to modernize voting and the county officials who are ultimately responsible for deciding how we vote. There was also the disastrous use of an app that caused chaos and confusion at the Iowa Democratic Caucus earlier this year. And we did a Gadget Lab podcast on that. If you go back in the feed, I'm sure you can find that to listen to. But other countries outside of the U.S. do effectively use apps or online voting in their elections. So why can't we? Lily, what's your best response to that?
Right. It feels like a pressing question because it's like, look, other countries do it. Also, we bank online. Also, we, you know, have our health information in portals online. You know, what is the deal with the voting issue, right? But the really important difference to understand and why security researchers and election officials are really wary of, you know, modernizing the system in this way that you're describing is the secret ballot, right? Like, we have this concept in US voting that nobody is going to know who you voted for because the sanctity of the secret ballot is really important, right? And there's a really big difference between doing something totally secretly online, all digitally, where nobody can check what happened, what you said, what was recorded, versus something like your bank account, where we think of it as being secret, but really, you know, your bank knows your transactions, your bank knows what your balance is, and you know. So that's two parties who both know and, you know, have both seen these numbers and can reconcile any differences. With voting, nobody else is supposed to know. So the problem that comes up is just like, if I vote on an app and I see on the screen that it's the vote I wanted to cast, how do I know as soon as that those packets of data leave my screen and go out into the world, how do I know that my vote was recorded, tallied in the way I think I submitted it, right? And so that's the big hurdle.
How do other countries handle online voting?
First of all, most of the countries are much, 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 much smaller than the US. So that's just like a thing to factor in. And then second of all, some of those systems, when they've been audited, have major security vulnerabilities. So just because there hasn't been a known mass incident doesn't mean one couldn't happen. And in fact, some countries have had, you know, vote tampering and manipulation. So that's why people are so wary about doing it in the US. And I think the researchers I have talked to, they say it's not impossible to devise a system that would be secure enough and transparent enough, but not too transparent because we want to maintain everyone's privacy, that it would be possible to do that. But it's just a much bigger lift than what we're imagining when we say like, oh, an app, oh, the blockchain. That's not the level that the project would need to be on in order to produce a system that would potentially work. one time I had a source compare it to the space race and to, like, you know, NASA and landing a man on the moon, that it would need to be that level of government investment, community buy-in, like from the country, everyone behind it, everyone excited about it, that level of expertise. Some people have said that's an exaggeration, but you know, my reporting has really borne it out that it's like, it is possible. We just need to imagine it on this whole other scale of investment than what we're currently thinking about.
And I mean, really, you're not talking about one system. You're talking about dozens and dozens of systems, like at least one for each state. You're going to be talking about a mobile app for iOS, a mobile app for Android, a web version possibly, you know, so that people who don't have smartphones can still log onto a computer and do it that way. And then that being built on top of the systems that we already have in place, in-person voting and mail-in voting, right?
Yeah, Mike, that's such a great point because, you know, another thing that is really sacred in U.S. voting is decentralized state-by-state control. There's no, you know, a big difference between my analogy to NASA and what would need to happen, exactly as you're saying, would be an opt-out for states, the opportunity to build something else. The federal government, you know, is not allowed to come in and say, this is the system we're all going to use for voting. That is, you know, not in our constitution. So yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to sort of say it can't happen or not be hopeful. Like, that's really what I want to emphasize. It's not to be a downer or be negative. It's just like, this is the reality of what it would take. And the thing about elections is, and this goes back to what we were saying about mail ballots, you can't have a situation where you don't realize that the election was tampered with. You know, it's so what a researcher I've spoken to a lot compared it to the barking dog model of security. You know, it's not that problems can never arise. It's that you need to have the dog barking, telling you something went wrong. There's a problem. Somebody's here. You know, like that's what you really need. And that's really difficult to implement in digital systems. And this is where the tension crops up, because it feels like people are saying, no, we just can't do this. And that's not really what they're saying, but they're saying, you got to expand your mind about the reality of the difficulty.
Lily, what are some of the most viable ideas or solutions you've heard around making voting digital? And not only solving the complicated tech issues around it, but addressing equity issues that would inevitably emerge.
Another reason this is so important is accessibility, right? One of the reasons this debate gets so heated is because it feels like some people are saying, nope, this just can't happen, even though it would be so incredibly helpful for so many people who have accessibility issues to voting, whether it's the physical, you know, barriers, or that's, you know, work schedule issues or childcare, you know, all these things. So it can, you know, feel like that's really being ignored. And I think that's not the case. But, you know, to your point, it would need to be a system that has that accessibility piece for everyone, hopefully meaning that there is sort of a lot more equity of opportunity in terms of who can vote and making sure everyone can vote. But then also, right, what is the system that will be secure and transparent enough without being overly transparent to make this work? And I think, so two pieces. One concept is just the idea of monitoring from every angle, every software component, every piece, every line of code, however you want to think about it. There would need to be a mechanism to monitor for abnormal behavior, right? So that would be one way that you might be able to detect that something's going wrong. And then I think the other concept that holds a lot of promise is there's a lot of new types of encryption and sort of fields of study within encryption to be able to do mathematical calculations, such as adding, such as tabulating, on data that never gets decrypted. So it's like it's locked in this thing that you can't read, but you can still add two pieces together and get a new total that maybe you also don't even know the total until the end or something. So that would be a way to know that everyone's vote was private, that nobody ever knew the whole time, you know, who voted for what, but that you can still work on the data and get a result. Because, right, that's always the issue you need to bridge. It's like, well, if it's secret, how do I count it, you know? But yeah, there is not really an easy answer to, like, what's the promising thing.
When a voting app is available and I go to the App Store and download it, does Apple get 30% of my vote?
It sounds like they would want it from what I've heard. But you do bring up another good point that another reason this is so difficult is that we would all be doing it on our own devices. And even if the sort of back end system in the cloud or, you know, managed by your election officials, even if all of that was ultra secure, another major hurdle is like what happens if there's malware on your device, you know, that's really the reason that going to a polling place is, you know, superior in this security model than everybody just, you know, doing whatever, or mailing your ballot to the, you know, the centralized counting, things like that. That's the reason we have the model we have right now, is that if we all are just depending on our own devices, it's an additional layer of defense, because it's like you need to defend the system in general, and you also need to defend everybody's personal devices.
All right, 2020 paper ballots it is.
Yeah, it's daunting, but I want to point out, you guys, we already have like the coolest, most enduring, amazing technology, which is paper. Like it's not, this is my pitch. It's not, I get a cut from the paper lobby. No, but you know, I really want to emphasize, it's not old and outmoded. It's like totally amazing that this can work on the scale, you know, of the US voting pool. Like, it's awesome. So it's not all bad, you guys.
And don't forget to vote. Just vote.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, no matter how you do it, just vote. All right, let's take another quick break, and then we're going to come back with recommendations.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here, stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click Here.
And liftoff.
Click Here, every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lily, I'm going to go to you first. What's your recommendation?
So there are other things in my life besides encouraging you to vote, but that's the main thing we're doing in this podcast. So my recommendation is also about how to get information on voting. If you need more assistance than what the Wired.com guide can offer, there are a lot of sites that are offering sort of state-by-state breakdowns, you know, of how to register, how to get your ballot by mail, or how to vote in person, all those things. There's vote.org. The secretaries of state have a guide out. But the one I like the best is the U.S. Election Assistance Commission state-by-state guide. It breaks down everything. It has sort of the full gamut, I think, of things you might want to know. It's just a drop-down menu where you put in your state and it'll spit out all the different relevant links. So that's my recommendation. And of course, once again, additional recommendation to just vote in any way.
Great. Thank you so much for that. Mike, what's your recommendation?
My recommendation is a book that I just read. It's called Year of the Monkey, and it's a memoir by Patti Smith. Patti Smith, the singer and poet and just all-around cultural badass. She's written a few memoirs over the years. This one takes place entirely during the year 2016, and it is a combination of a travel log and a dream journal, and just sort of her floating around in America and in Europe, sort of living her internal life. And I'm bringing it up this week because, of course, since it takes place during 2016, over the course of the book, politics start to creep in, and there's a really kind of fun narrative that you get to follow. Well, fun in quotes, I'm doing air quotes, but it's this narrative creeps in about America and about politics in America and about divisiveness and about toxicity. And it's really incredible to read somebody who is can seem as detached from daily life as Patti Smith seems in the book, talk about these issues in 2016, but reading them now after we've already been through 4 years of this divisiveness and this toxicity. So perspective is the key word there. It really puts things into perspective. It's also just a fantastic read. It came out about a year ago, or I guess about 9 months ago, and I'm just getting to it now because the queue is long, but the pandemic has me reading more than ever. So that's my recommendation. Year of the Monkey by Patti Smith.
Great. Is there a Patti Smith album you'd recommend listening to in the background while you read her book?
I would say Waves is a good one. Or, of course, Horses. I like Horses, the live reimagining of Horses. That's a good one. But, you know, it's also like, it's kind of hard to read anything to her audio stuff because her albums, her music albums are like poetry over rock music. So it's kind of like you have to turn that part of your brain off if you're going to be...
You have to listen to one or the other.
Right. It's like, yeah. I think they should each be experienced individually.
But it's right. Like when you put the book down, then you keep the vibes going, keep the groove going by putting on an album.
You can just hang with Patti all day.
That doesn't sound like a terrible thing to do in these pandemic times.
Oh, sounds lovely.
Quite great, actually.
Lauren, what is your recommendation?
Well, my recommendation... Well, you could wear these whether you're reading a Patti Smith book or whether you're voting by mail. It's a pair of pajamas. So my friend Chantel recently sent me a pair of pajamas unprompted. It was a lovely surprise. I think she got the sense I was stressed. And they're from Cozy Earth. And they're just incredible. I feel so strongly about these pajamas. I'm a little alarmed by how much I love these pajamas, but I love them so much. In particular, this is the long sleeve bamboo pajama set. They are expensive. They're normally $169.
Wow.
Very expensive pajamas. There is a Labor Day sale where they're going to be 20% off and you can get them for $135. Not sure how long that sale is going to be going on for. I feel like I'm shilling for the company. I'm not. I've never spoken to them. All I know is that I really, really love these pajamas. They're this stretch knit fabric. They're really soft. Even if you kind of order up in size, they still fit really well and drape really nicely. They have good breathability, so they're not too hot while you're sleeping. I may or may not still be wearing the pajama pants now. Not going to confirm, but I can't believe I feel so strongly about these pajamas, but I do. And I like good pajamas. Like I have other pajama sets, but this is next level stuff. So Cozy Earth bamboo pajamas, if you can swing the cost because they are costly, I recommend them.
And they're bamboo. Which is good for the planet because bamboo grows faster than any other plant.
Better for the planet. Better for your sleeping.
I feel like this is putting me to shame because I've really tapped into wearing like my rattiest, worst pajamas and clothes in the pandemic to just kind of like, I don't know, use them up or something, like get rid of them. But now I feel like maybe that's the wrong approach and I should be lounging in luxury, you know?
And it's not a terrible idea. If you're looking for a slightly less expensive pair of pajamas, I recommend Soma, because I've had those for years too. And then actually my aunt sent me another pair of Soma pajamas recently. I don't know why everybody keeps sending me pajamas, but I'm not complaining about it. I really like this. But those are a little bit less expensive. I think you can find them on Amazon too. And then every so often, you know, you got to wear like the 2008 Beijing Olympics t-shirt that has armpit stains just because.
Okay, now you're finally speaking my language.
Yes, but that said, good pajamas are also a good investment. So thanks to my friend for sending them. That was really, really nice. And check out Cozy Earth. All right, that's our show for this week. Thank you, Lily, for joining us.
Good to be with you guys.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can find all of us on Twitter. Just check the show notes. The show is produced by Boone Ashworth, and our executive producer is Alex Kappelman. Bye for now. We'll be back next week, and don't forget to vote.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you. And how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.